Welcome to Season 3 of the UK Virtual School Podcast with your host, Sid, educational disruptor and founder of the first online school that dares to be different. Our third season marks the end of the third academic year, where we interview parents, students and teachers who are part of the UK Virtual School family. If you are new to our podcast, please do check out the golden gems from seasons 1 and 2. Now, this podcast is for homeschoolers, home educators, world schoolers, and those parents seeking for an alternative that is effective, flexible, and high quality. If this sounds like you, why not join us in disrupting education as we know it and creating a legacy of learning that's full of passion and enthusiasm. Welcome to the UK Virtual School Podcast. Today we've got with us a parent, Thomas, who's going to be talking about his experience at UK Virtual School and how he has found education growing up as well. So Thomas, welcome. So what was it about our school in particular, especially when there were so many other schools that you Googled? What was it about UK Virtual School that attracted you to have a go with us? Because you've been with us for a year now. What was it at the beginning that kind of made you take that leap with us?
We had the need of finding like a school for him. So, and we didn't want to go to the, we didn't want to go back to the regular in-person learning, not because we don't like it, but first we really liked these very close interactions and to be in touch with the technology and this virtual environment, because this enables a lot of different skills and to be very close with the technology and so on. So we started looking for like a remote school, and we also didn't want him to lose contact with English as a language. So for 2 years now, he was mainly being exposed to the English language. So we wanted to, like, an alternative. We got to know the UK Virtual School. We made several Google searches, and 3 or 4 schools came to our attention. And that's how we found the UK Virtual School.
And then you took the leap, you signed up and you enrolled. And what was your, do you remember back to your first kind of lesson or the first experience or exposure that you had with us? Was it the induction day? Did you come to an open day with us? Or was it that first lesson that Miguel took with us?
There were several things, and this is kind of difficult thing to do, because you're trying to find a school for your son or for your children. It's not that easy, because you it's not like a regular school that you go there, you go to the in-person open days, and you can, you know, feel and touch the school. So here we're talking about a virtual environment, and there is a lot of skepticism from our side, because it's not something tangible that you can touch, that you can feel, that you can understand. What I liked about your school at first is that the information was very straightforward. Like, when you have a remote school, a virtual school, it's critical to provide all the necessary information to the parents, to understand what the schedules look like, how the fees look like, everything, what are the restrictions, the rules, frequently asked questions. And I guess that your webpage got everything very well explained and to the point. And I think this is what I like, that all the information that I wanted to have was there. So this is what attracted me the most at first.
Yeah, I think that's really important to kind of get some feedback from other people that have experienced something beforehand. And I guess now that you've experienced it, it's nice for you to be in that position to be able to share your experience to new families that might be looking at joining. So tell us a little bit about your experience with education. How was that growing up, and why was it that you wanted to do and try something different with Miguel?
Rather than trying, let's say, something different with Miguel, is really understanding that every child has their own path. Like they build their own education path at their own pace. So I think this is critical because sometimes I even get frustrated when he doesn't understand something. I think that's not fair, like you getting frustrated with your son because he's not getting something, he's not understanding some concept and so on. Because I was not better, let's say, in any way. Like, in other words, he is today by far ahead of where I was at that point. I think it's key to understand each child. They have their own ways of learning, of understanding, and they are better at some topics than others. So I recently found out that Miguel was very, let's say, tech savvy. He really likes programming. So I downloaded the educational version of Minecraft, and he was able to pass all the levels with my help, but he was able to solve some problems in a different way that I would have solved them. And I'm an engineer, so that was pretty amazing. But in his case, he struggles a bit with the spelling, reading, and writing. English is not his, main language, let's say. At that point, when I realized that I needed to treat Miguel as I would have liked to be treated when I was his age, that I knew that he would be able to excel at anything that he wants. So in my case, at his age, I was pretty much lost. I was really struggling, not with one, two, but with all the subjects, let's say, with English, math, writing, and I guess that I didn't get it, that I didn't understand why I was being taught what I was being taught. What was the purpose of that? Like, why am I learning this? And I didn't get it until I was around sixth grade or so, when my father took the one of the those the, took the decision that would have changed my life forever, let's say. And he hired an private math teacher. He was really like an engineering student from a public university in Bogota, because at the time I was living in Bogota, Colombia. Whenever I met Luis Gabriel and I started taking classes with him, I didn't feel that I was actually getting, like, having a class, let's say. He was very close because he was also young and we exchanged experiences and so on. And at that point, I didn't, let's say, understand again, like, what was the objective of what I was learning. Like, why are you teaching me math? The way he explained things to me, it was very informal. It was not like, okay, we have this force, and it's the force is equivalent to the mass and the acceleration in the vector direction. No, it was more like, no, let's suppose we have like this object and it's falling from a tree and so on, and it was more engaging, and I was not feeling forced, let's say, because when I was at school I was getting this pressure, like, you need to be great, you need to have the best grades, you cannot miss a single homework, and everything was so strict that I was just feeling pressure. I was not really enjoying the learning at all. It was just pressure, 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 pressure. And with Luis Gabriel, I found like this, special place where I could hang out with a friend and he would explain things to me. From that point onward, everything changed in my life.
You're a great example of showcasing that school doesn't define you. Your experiences and what you achieve in a school environment doesn't define the rest of your life. Like, you've gone on to become an engineer and very successful, and you travel the world and you go and work in different places, and you've made a success of it, even though you did have your struggles in the early years in school. And it just shows that learning never stops as an adult. You're continually learning, you're continually finding out new things, you're evolving as a person. And it's also showcasing the power of teachers and the relationships that you have with them, because you talk so highly of your tutor. who obviously had a huge impact on you as a person. And I think it's really important to realize that there are teachers out there that take that extra little bit of care, because I could name a teacher that had a serious impact on my life and has changed the course of the direction I've taken in my life. I would not be a teacher right now. I would not have opened up UK Virtual School. I would not have done the course I did at uni if it wasn't for his guidance when I was younger. So I think there are always teachers that guide us. And I think it's really amazing that you are able to trace that back and you're able to be grateful for those opportunities. So is that the sort of education that you want your son to have, where he has a really good relationship with a tutor that is able to guide him and mentor him, that opens up his way of thinking about a certain subject into a different way of thinking? Is that what you were trying to achieve by going online and being able to allow him to explore Minecraft and to learn in a different way?
All topics might be very interesting to a child, but it's just the way you frame it and the way you explain it that makes the difference. So you can make a topic as boring as you may want if you don't know how to teach and how to engage. And this is the most difficult thing of being a teacher. You can know a lot of things, but if you don't know how to connect, you're done. You're not changing lives of people. So I guess that I just want him to really get in touch with the best teachers possible, like at least several teachers that are able to explain to him things the proper way, in a way that he can connect and understand. That's why I downloaded this Minecraft and we completed the exercises, because first, he loves Minecraft, and second, it really makes him engage with programming. And we practice for one day, and the other day he was asking for more. So it's just about making things fun and understanding. So one last thing that changed like my life, but it was, or not really changed, but this other aha moment was when I was studying engineering. And I think after graduating, I started learning machine learning and artificial intelligence. This was also one of the topics that was taught at my university just in the final years, let's say. And when I was studying this topic, I really understood the whys of that all the engineers have at some point in their career. Because when you start working, you realize that you don't really need all that math. Like, you don't really need all the physics, the linear equations, the linear algebra, the differential equations, the statistics. When I started studying machine learning, I understood this is, like, I think this is one of the topics that touches all of those things that you thought you were not going to use ever to use, that you thought you would never use in your career. So in machine learning, you for studying at least artificial intelligence and these large language models like ChatGPT and so on, you really need to have like a very pretty good understanding of what's happening on, you know, under the hood. So you need to understand things like linear equations, differentiation, linear algebra, like, and you need to understand how matrix operation work and so on. And I think it was pretty sad that it was only until that time that I got that aha moment. Because this is where all things connect. Like, oh, this is why I need all these math operations. This is why the dot product is important. Because when you're explained, like, what do they teach you at school? Okay, you have two vectors. The dot product is simply the projection of one vector over the other, and is the cosine of the internal angle. So when are you going to ever use that in your life? Like, never. But when you understand, like, okay, you have these things called the convolutional neural networks, and it's like a machine that learns by looking at pictures, and it learns if an object is like a car or a bicycle and so on, it learns by constantly by trial and error and understanding how images are labeled and trying to guess, and you backpropagate the error and you differentiate the error and you multiply the error by the ways of the matrices, and this is how it works. Again, it's kind of sad that you need to wait until this far to understand that. So something that I would like to do, and it's something that I dream about doing someday, is going to even to a campus or a high school and tell children like, hey, you're learning all this because you can do all these different things, like all these math, all these physics, all these statistics. Statistics are key for any PhD student, for any person close to the science community and the research. You need to know statistics. So it would be great to go like to any high school and tell them like all this math, all these things. You can do it. Use it for this, for this, for this, for this, for this. And then they would say, oh, okay, that's why I need to learn it. Oh, that's why I don't want to learn it. I'm not even interested in that.
I think it's really important for students to be able to realize what the real life application of something is, because without that purpose, what's the point? Like you said, there's no real reason. And I think I've never understood why we learn all of that, all the vector stuff. And I'm a mathematician. I did maths at uni, but I never got to the aha moment. But I remember I used to do a radio show, and I remember interviewing lots of engineers and lots of researchers, and they talked about real life applications of different maths. So you've talked about specifically vectors, but I remember we had a researcher, and he was talking about how his research was about liquid flow. And he used integration and differentiation to understand how liquid was flowing through blood vessels. And I was like, wow, that's so amazing. Like, you can take maths and you can apply it to human biology. And he's doing research which is helping doctors to be able to understand how valves work when there's a heart attack and they need to open up a certain vein or artery. And I was like, whoa, that's amazing. And we had so many phone calls from parents going, this is amazing. We never realized that maths could be used in biology. And I think those are the kind of moments where we never hear about that stuff. We hear about being a doctor and being a lawyer and being a I don't know, an architecture. So you hear about the most commonly known fields, but it's those, the interesting fields are the ones that are not so commonly known, because they use science and maths in a way that you wouldn't normally expect. And I think there needs to be more conversation around that. Because I remember my high school teacher used to say to me, you should be an engineer. I had no idea what that was. No one took the time to explain to me what that was. And it wasn't until I interviewed a range of different engineers, and I don't know which kind of engineering you do, and we'll talk about that in a second. But I remember interviewing civil engineers, electronic engineers. We interviewed engineers that worked in like more chemical-based chemical engineers. And the more and more I heard about what they did, I was like, ah, that was my two subjects, physics and maths, in application. Like, if someone had explained to me this is what engineering is, I probably would have gone down that route because it made so much sense. But no one took the time to explain. I think it's really important, the stuff that you're talking about, going into schools and talking about these careers. I think it's really important to do that so kids can connect with what they want to potentially do in the future. But tell us a little bit about the engineering that you are doing. Like, what specifically is it called? What do you do? Is it more computer science, or is it more, I don't know, robotics and machines? I don't know what engineering that you do.
I studied mechatronics engineering, which is like a mixture of of four engineering programs or topics, let's say. It's not four engineers in one, I will tell you. It takes different concepts from different engineers, engineering areas, and it merges everything into a single, field, which is mechatronics. And it's How I would explain it is the version 2 of mechanical engineering. Because if you see machines before, they were mostly mechanical machines. Like they have a mechanical component with gears and axes and so on, and the materials and the way energy was transferred, etc. It was most machines before were purely mechanical or electric mechanical, or they had like a one or other way of interacting with energy, like electrical energy or temperature and so on. So today, nowadays, most machines are electronical machines, like digital electronic based machines. So normally when we talk about a machine, you have at least four components. So you have the mechanical component, you have the electronics that has all the logic for the machines to work, you have the software that is needed to run on the machines, and you have another area which is control. So that's basically mechatronics engineer. So for example, if you take a car, you have it has it the like a Tesla car, it has its mechanical structure, it has a lot of digital circuits, sensors, and so on. So you have the LiDAR sensors, the infrared sensors, the cameras, and so on, which are all inputs to the car. You have all this circuitry and the signals getting into the digital components and the circuits. You have the software that runs and that supports all, that has all the logic to understand and to process these different signals. And you have control. And basically, control is one of the most complicated areas in mechatronics, because it has a lot of math. This is like next level math, I would say, where you try to model the car itself in a mathematical manner, and you need to understand it from a physics and from a basically from a physics perspective. You need to model the car. I need to understand how should I interact with the engine of the car and with the different components to make it achieve or to reach a specific velocity, let's say. Like you need to accelerate the car, and you need to keep it fixed as a single velocity. This is where you have the control. You need to achieve this level of velocity. So these are all examples of mechatronics devices, or your phone, it's a mechatronic device, and etc.
So mechatronics is how all of those different components, say in a Tesla car, work together and how they all kind of combine together. That's pretty cool. I've never heard the term mechatronics before. It's the first time I've heard it. So there you go. I'm learning something new. And even though my field is physics and maths and I've spoken to so many engineers, I think you're the first mechatronics engineer that I've spoken to. So thank you for sharing that. I think lots of students will find that really interesting and fascinating to hear as well. What's next for you? Where do you see your son kind of heading in the future? Do you think he's going to go down the computer science route because he's interested in Minecraft? Is that something that you want to explore further with him and see where that leads?
I think that he likes a lot all the gaming stuff. By this, I mean like he has like a passion for creating, crafting, designing games. Normally, he would take like a piece of cardboard and he would draw like a grid with different numbers and so on, and we need to roll dice, and he's able to create and design a game from scratch, like the different components, the characters, the rules, the mechanics of the game, how you win, how you lose, and so on. And I guess he's really passionate about this. And it's not like he has created like one game. Like I think he could at this point, he could have perfectly created around 20 or 30 games, different games. Yes, like they could be like board based, or they could be with, you know, different plastic cups and so on, where you need to hide some things and etc. So he has created the different games, and he explains to me, okay, let's play it. So, or card games, etc. And he explained to me how to play, how we win, how we should have fun with it. And so I really, so if I connect the dots, like he likes, he's also an artist. He loves drawing, you know, designing stuff, creating characters, coloring them, and so on. So if I connect the dots and I see like this passion for, you know, creating games, building characters, drawing. And also his passion for, you know, this programming thing and so on, and Minecraft and the digital world and the digital games. I see him in the future, you know, doing anything related to game design and so on, or even programming games, which is like another science. Like if you are a game programmer, you are like next level, because for that you really not only need design and so on, but which is normally divided in teams, by the way. But if you're like the lead engineer or something, you really need to understand pretty well physics as well and programming, etc. So I think it's up to him, but I just want to give him the tools to so he has these little aha moments to understand, you know, where he can apply and how he can apply what he loves, let's
And
say.
how old is he at the moment?
He's 8, almost 8.
He's 8, and I think if he's already designed 20 games already at the age of 8, you need to start keeping a document of all of his games, because at some point you might want to have them copyrighted or patented, because he could become the next inventor, right? And he comes up with all these new ideas. And I think it'll be great if you're able to get him some work experience in a games design company or something like that in the future. But it's amazing how there are now coding programs that even young kids can participate in. Because I remember learning C++ when I was at uni, but now there are things like Scratch where kids as young as 5 can start coding and creating little mini games that are actually accessible and playable, right? And I think it's quite amazing how far in a couple of years technology has come by, and with AI coming out now, everything's at your fingertips. So he could get AI to completely design a game for him, but he still needs a critical ability to be able to program AI to be able to tell it what to do. And I think that's where the real challenge comes in now, to develop young people who are able to critically assess things and to be able to program AI devices. And I think he seems to already have the skills to do that, which is quite exciting. An exciting future for him.
Yes, I'm really excited about it. And again, I think it's just about giving him the tools and maybe, you know, like explaining things in a way that he understand, like the why of things. And yes, I'm also very excited about all these newly available tools for learning, such as Minecraft. It's just great. And again, you need to make it fun, because again, for example, you can explain the why of things just by enabling a game so children can learn. What is the why of using programming in the context of a game? Well, the why is just having fun. You just need to forget about anything else. Like the goal here is not learning really. You need to understand, and you need to explain children that the goal is having fun. It's not learning about a loop, you know, or an if condition, no, or code block. It's really like the goal is really having fun. So the goal is going from point A to point B in the, you know, in this mansion world in Minecraft. So you need to go through all the different rooms, and you need to unlock each room. So for that you need to complete different challenges. When you are teaching this, you really need to separate, like you're not teaching your children how to program, you're just having fun in a different way, because then the programming is just like another tool that I need. I just need to do this to complete the game. It's just like the medium. It's not like the goal. The goal is not programming. The goal is completing the game. And when they understand that this is, yeah. So when they understand, like, oh, I just, this is something like a pen and a paper, or like a soccer ball. So the soccer ball enables the football game. The programming enables the Minecraft. So you don't focus that much on that. And then it's fun. And then they understand, okay, this is another tool. And then as time goes by, then start to fall in love with the tool, you know. But like, you know, like golf players, that they start to love with their clubs and so on, and understand the different shapes and the materials, etc. Like they, but they just want to have fun. They just need the club, and then at the end they start to get the passion about the clubs and so on. But at first it's just about the game.
I like the way you think about that, because then it's not about the actual tool, as you call it. The coding is a byproduct, and so it's all about growth mindset, which is like a huge value at UK Virtual School. It's about enjoying the process, and then the results come as a byproduct. And I think kids are sponges, so if you can just get them to enjoy the process, you'll get the results in the end of whatever you're trying to achieve. So yeah, I love that way of that analogy that you used is really effective. I think that's great. Thank you so much, Thomas, for joining me today and talking about your journey and also your career and your kind of philosophy around education. I think it's been really eye-opening, and it's certainly given me new things to think about. So thank you so much for sharing your life with us.
Thank you, Sid, for inviting me here. It has been a great discussion.
Thank you everyone for listening in today's podcast, and we'll speak to you soon. Thank you so much for tuning into the UK Virtual School podcast with your host, Sid. I look forward to having you join me again soon. In the meantime, if you're considering online schooling to take away the stress of having to plan and structure everything yourself, why not head over to our website, ukvirtualschool.com. You can join in our next online open day or book in a Zoom meeting with me to discuss options. I look forward to seeing you soon. Bye.